This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we will talk about gay marriage. There will be a panel of significance this Wednesday at the Lyceum Dean Ballroom, and we'll talk with Jacqueline Stalls of Forum 35 about what's going on. Rhode Island last week became the 10th state to endorse gay marriage, signed by the governor. Is Louisiana next? Charlie Molossaw, the former congressman who ran for the U.S. Senate a few years ago against David Bruce Bitter and lost resoundingly, is back at the Louisiana Capitol, where he was once a lawmaker. He's now a lobbyist, and we'll get his take on what's occurring in Baton Rouge. The session ends a month from today. Also, I'm sure Congressman Molossaw will have some thoughts about what's happening in the Beltway. All this, but now the news on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number outside our area. It is 877-217-5757. You may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. Hope you've had a great weekend. Glad you're starting your week with WRKF. And in just a bit, we'll hear from Congressman Charles Molossaw, a man who served our state with distinction on Capitol Hill and at the state capitol, where he is once again situated as a prominent lobbyist. And we'll talk with Charlie Molossaw about everything going on from Baton Rouge to the Beltway in just a bit. We begin with two people involved with Forum 35 here in Baton Rouge, and they are co-chairs of the Cultural Diversity Group panel, Jackie Stalls and Eric Dexter. And this is a big week for the organization. There will be a forum that has of significance this Wednesday at the Lyceum. But we wanted to frame the discussion that will take place this Wednesday by noting what happened last week in Rhode Island, the 10th state to make same-sex marriage legal. And that is the topic this Wednesday from 6:30 to 8 p.m. at the Lyceum. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Eric, is Louisiana next? Are we going to have same-sex marriage in Louisiana sometime very soon?
I don't know if it's next, but I think at least the discussion and the conversation is going to be next. It's moving this way, and I think it's a hot topic among our young professionals here in Baton Rouge.
Well, states representing 16% of the national population have embraced same-sex marriage. They are Iowa, New York, Vermont, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Maine, Maryland, Washington, Rhode Island, and the District of Columbia also. Now, Jackie Stalls, there are no southern states on that list. It would seem that it might be a harder sell here than in some of these other states.
I agree, absolutely. I think in the southern states, you're looking more of a religious background for most communities. And when you start talking about issues like this, they become very passionate with our religion. I think that when we think about gay marriage in Baton Rouge, we want to make sure we're having the discussions that are necessary to keep young professionals here. Just discussing the topic and having an open dialogue is very important.
Well, you're representing Forum 35,
yes,
which is an organization of young professionals. Do younger people have opinions that are more open on this issue?
It seems to be that way. It seems to the young professionals, just young people in general, seem to be a little bit more open-minded, a little bit more progressive, especially when it comes to social issues.
You're from North Carolina, Jackie. That's a southern state, last time I checked. But even among southern states, there are variations. Would something like this have more of a chance to be embraced in Louisiana or in North Carolina?
Ooh, that's a tough question. I think it depends on where you are in North Carolina. But, I absolutely think there are North Carolinians who are discussing this issue. But I have to say, personal opinion, Louisiana might be behind North Carolina on this issue, just a bit.
And remember, North Carolina produced a well-known senator named Jesse Helms, mm-hmm. who I'm sure would be quite vocal in opposition if he were still with us. In March, a divided U.S. Supreme Court heard arguments on the legality of two marriage laws, the Federal Defense of Marriage Act, which defines marriage as between one man and one woman, and California's Proposition 8, which bans same-sex marriage. We're waiting for a decision from the High Court. Now, what happens at the Supreme Court level may determine quite a bit about what states can or cannot do. What is the attitude of people in Louisiana, not only those who are gay and some of whom would like to get married, but about others who are straight or asexual who think this is an issue that has relevance?
What I see is that everyone wants this city and this state to be the next great American city and also to be a great state for the future. What we draw the line on is that, is this a part of that future? Do we want gay marriage as a part of our future? I see a lot of the younger progressives that see this is one of the things that kind of is a dividing line between what's going to make us move forward. If you look at some of the other cities that are around the country that we like to sometimes compare ourselves to or try to model ourselves after, the Austins, San Francisco's, where we want to move towards, they're a little bit more liberal, especially when it comes to social issues, or at least just the atmosphere. Maybe not even the law itself, but it's just the atmosphere of the people itself that's a little bit more liberal in their ways.
But both Texas and California do not allow gay marriage.
Right.
That's where Austin and San Francisco are located.
Right, correct.
So why should Louisiana do something that two places you mentioned that are considered to be the most liberal or the most progressive in the U.S.? You can't get a gay marriage in either of those locations.
Right, right. Well, you don't always have to be last to something either. Sometimes you can be first. You can lead from the front at some point in time as well.
There's no state lawmaker out there with a bill to do this. Have you found one who might be receptive to carrying the water for you on the legislative front?
That's a great idea, Jim. But, at Forum 35, what we make sure we communicate is that we don't advocate for a side. We educate on a topic. And we want to make sure that Baton Rouge has approached this issue in different ways before, not so successfully. But what we want to make sure is that we're giving an opportunity for our young professionals and the community to come out and have a dialogue about this and be heard in a safe and friendly environment. So it's not about one side or the other. It's about that communication and that dialogue.
All right. 297-5633 is your number. 877-217-5757 for Jackie Stahls and Eric Dexter. They are co-chairs of the Cultural Diversity Panel for the Forum 35 group, the Cultural Diversity Committee, and they're presenting a forum this Wednesday at the Lyceum at 6:30 p.m., and the participants thus far who are announced, Joe Tregel, Reverend Chris Andrews, Ryan Halford, I believe he's a teacher, correct, at St. Michael's, Father Bryce Sibley, and Phil Smith. Now, that will tell you, and by the way, I'll be moderating the panel, so I look forward to this, but looks like you have two Catholics and three activists on the side of being in favor of gay rights and gay marriage. Is this a balanced presentation?
Well, I would say it's as balanced as we could for this first time. As I told someone the other day, this is not the end-all, be-all of this discussion, as we like to call it, not a debate. This is something that we wanted to continue happen. And we're, Forum 35 is an all-volunteer organization. It's an all-volunteer board and committee. Our time and our resources is very limited outside of our paying gig. So we use our contacts that we have, and this is what we were able to get together for this first event. But we would like it to keep going forward and have this discussion continue. So is it balanced? I'm not sure, but we'll see. We'll have people there in the audience, and they'll be free to speak and ask questions.
Judy in New Road says, why aren't you working more earnestly on the tolerance resolution, the one Baton Rouge resolution, something which might be more palatable at this time than gay marriage?
Well, again, this is not anything that we are trying to push for or against. Just want to make that clear with Forum 35. We're just providing the form for it. This is a panel. That's what we
sounds like you're for it, though, Eric.
Well, that's your personal.
That's my personal.
I think there's some things that we would have to do to make things a little bit more. If we want the city to progress, there are some things that I think stand in the way of that. That may be being one of them, and I'm not sure, but I think that may be one of them. But as Forum 35 itself, we just want to provide the panel for it and let people come out there and be able to voice their opinion.
Would it be good, say, if the Baton Rouge Area Chamber got involved in this on one side or the other? What do you think, Jackie?
I think it would be interesting if the Baton Rouge Area Chamber.
Of course it would be interesting, but would it drive public opinion?
I believe that at this point, any sort of recognition, really, in the community would drive public opinion. But giving people a forum to learn from other experiences, perhaps even consider things they haven't considered before with gay marriage. There's a lot in my research and in the conversations I've had in the community on this topic, even myself, I've learned a lot of, there's a lot of topics to be covered when you're talking about this. It affects us in many ways, legally, you know, obviously, but also just, you know, emotionally and from a religious standpoint. So we're making sure that we're giving everyone the opportunity to speak to all of that.
Though the Louisiana legislature, in its wisdom, has decided not to embrace legislation that would protect gay people in employment. It seems that on these issues, these social issues, the people who are calling the shots, lawmakers and the governor, they're very conservative. So you use the term progressive, Eric. How are you going to change the minds and hearts and votes of people in short time, or is this going to be a long, tough slog for people who have your position?
Well, I personally believe anything worth doing and anything of significance is going to take some time. It's going to take a lot of thought. It's going to take a lot of hard work. So to have this, to make progress, and I won't say progressive, people use progressive to make it seem like that's what liberal folks are, but progressive is a good word for anything in life. If you want to progress, everyone wants progress, whether it's in job or their family, or anything in their city. So yes, we want it to progress, but progress, move forward, you know, stop thinking that this is back in the 1960s or the 1940s. Will the lawmakers change? I don't know, but there's a lot of people out there. There's a lot of activity. And I think the young professionals are having this conversation right now.
Well, my guess is that if this went before the legislature right now, it would get very few votes. And the governor, of course, is against it. He's made that plain. And his point of view is not unusual. Just a few years ago, President Obama and President Clinton were against this. They've had a change of heart. Perhaps they really were in favor when they were saying they were against. What does that say about them? Are they good politicians, or what are they? Are they hypocrites?
Well, I don't. If someone changes,
did they really change?
Do they really change? And we had the other politician. I remember the exact name, but he found out that his son was gay, and then he changed his stance on it. So maybe if more people start having gay family members pull up in their family, they may think their stance may change a little bit.
All right, Michael on Sherwood. Michael, you're on the air with Jackie Stahls and Eric Dexter. Hi, Michael.
Hi there, Jim. I my feeling is Louisiana will have to be drug into the future, kicking and screaming. I've been with the same man. I'm a man myself for 9 years. We've raised 2 children. You know, we're just like any other family. We should be able to, you know, have our family recognized.
Here's a man who would like to get married, but in Louisiana and in most other states, that's not a real possibility. So what do you say to him? Does he need to wait, or does he need to move to one of these other states?
Well, obviously, he's made the choice, and thank you for calling in. He's made the choice to stay and raise a family here, given the fact that he still doesn't have the rights that a man and woman married in this state would have. So the first thing I say to him is, please come out to our event Wednesday night. We would love to have you there and hear your opinion in front of our panel and our other attendees. And then, you know, thank you for sharing your information so candidly, and, you know, realize that there are the people who will be in attendance Wednesday night who will hear your struggle and who will be able to relate with you as well.
For somebody who gets married in another state and moves to Louisiana, what are the legal ramifications of that? I don't think they get recognized as a married couple in Louisiana, even though they are.
No, I don't think so. And I won't consider myself an expert on that by any means. Right. I don't think that's the case as right now.
We'll talk more about that Wednesday night. But it also would be interesting, if you read the New York Times every Sunday, there are several gay couples who are featured in the marriage section. If the Baton Rouge Advocate would do that, if a gay couple wanted to be featured. Pam Bordelon was on this show not long ago and said they would. So
under the new ownership
of John Georges, will we have the first gay couple featured in the Sunday People section, where all the married couples are presented in all their glory? We'll talk more about the Forum 35 event come Wednesday, live and in person, 6:30 to 8 p.m. Jackie Stahls, Eric Dexter, and those participating include Joe Tragel, Chris Andrews, Father Bryce Sibley, Ryan Halford, and Phil Smith. Back with Charlie Molossaw after this 90-second pause on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, and we're joined in studio now by former congressman, former state lawmaker, Charlie Molossaw. He was in Congress from 2005 to 2011. In 2010, he decided to run against David Bruce Vitter, the incumbent Republican, and lost a U.S. Senate quest. And he has not rested on his laurels, nor has he retired. Now he's the best-dressed man at the state capitol. Good morning to you, Congressman.
I wouldn't go that far. I've never been a clothes horse. As a matter of fact, if I could be in my jeans or my boots, I'd be more comfortable.
Well, you look good.
I'm not complaining.
You must have some good men's stores in Napoleonville.
No, there's no longer any more in Napoleonville. I'm still living off the wardrobe I have collectively between Washington and Louisiana. I haven't had to wear them very much, but I'm starting back into the business arena, I guess you might say. And so, yeah, I've got to put on a coat and tie now.
Well, speaking of Napoleonville, you're not far from the sinkhole.
Not at all. As a matter of fact, I visited at the sinkhole this past week, Friday, and my son's office is about 2.5-3 miles from the sinkhole. He and I went and grabbed a bite of lunch just to find out what's going on with those people, many of whom we know as their families and friends.
Are they frustrated?
Yes, they are. Very frustrated. I watch with interest going through Katrina and Rita Gustav Ike and the BP oil spill and see what's on the news and with Sandy, Hurricane Sandy up on the East Coast, and, of course, what's going on with the people here and the explosion out in West Texas, where now they found out there's only $1 million of liability coverage for that plant, which is going to be an interesting phenomenon with all the people killed and injured. Having gone through all those experiences, I don't say you become worldly, but I guess you get your eyes opened a bit more in time.
297-5633 is your number outside the area. It's 877-217-5757, inkstershow@wrkf.org. By email for former congressman and former state lawmaker Charles Molossaw, the pride of Napoleonville, and now you are back in Baton Rouge.
Back in Baton Rouge, actually in Baton Rouge for the first time. My wife and I just moved, bought a home here, and are getting settled in. She's got projects daily for chairs and buffet tables and all these other things, and hanging family pictures and doing those kind of things.
You were president of the American Sugarcane League, and when you were in Baton Rouge as a lawmaker, you were not a guy who was a backbencher. You were active as a state lawmaker.
Yeah, whenever I involve myself in things, I do it for a reason. The Congress was a tad different in that I only won that election by about 569 votes. And in the second week, my chief of staff came in and says, the word is out that the majority will not let you pass any legislation. So we basically went to Plan B, and which is what I basically did for the most part, with few exceptions when I was in the State House, and that was to amend on to bills, those things that were important to us. But when I was in the legislature, I did the tourism taxing district, which, of course, is advertised Louisiana worldwide, and I did a Louisiana Workers' Comp, a corporation bill with Governor Foster, who was the senator then.
The majority at that time, that was Nancy Pelosi, right?
When I was in the House, it was Nancy Pelosi the entire time. The first year I got there was the Republicans were a majority. Then the second term.
Dennis Hastert and then Speaker Pelosi. But why would they not want you to pass legislation?
Well, the majority at the time when I got there was the Republicans.
They thought they could take the seat back. Now I get it.
Yeah.
Now I get it. Because, you beat Billy Tozan.
Billy Jr.,
yeah. Who some thought was Billy Sr.
Yeah.
When you were running against him. And you beat him in a close race. And now that district that you represented, it's been carved up to the point where it's now a big part of the 6th district. Right?
I don't know if I'd call it carved, maybe butchered.
Well, that's exactly what happened. It's been gerrymandered,
yes.
No doubt about it.
That's what's going on in the country, and that's part of what's wrong with the lack of bipartisanship, I believe.
But with Congressman Cassidy giving up his seat to run for the U.S. Senate, as you did a few years ago, it would seem that you might very well be positioned to run for Congress again, if you so chose, in the 6th District.
Thank you for the compliment, but I've moved on to the part of my life which is trying to enjoy my friends and my family. As I tell people, my father unfortunately passed away the week before his 70th birthday. I hope the cards are better for me, but I'm going to try and enjoy my life for the next 5 years, and then everyone after that five-year period will be as much as I can to be with my grandkids and mm-hmm. enjoy myself and try and do the things that I didn't have the opportunity to do for roughly about 17 years.
Well, when you ran for the Senate in 2010, I would have handicapped that as a close race. I would have had Vitter as the favorite because he was the incumbent. And, of course, he was running in a year, 2 years after President Obama was elected. It's generally difficult for the person in the opposite party to win. But I would have thought, based on Senator Vitter's challenges, that you would have launched a race that would have been close. It wasn't close. What happened?
Well, there's several factors. One is the... I guess to be as blatantly honest as I can, is the color of the president. And he was really the person that my opponent put as the forefront of the campaign against him. Second thing was money. One of the problems you have when you're a blue dog Democrat, mm-hmm. As John Breaux, Billy Tozan, and people such as that, they went to Washington and made deals to get compromises to make government work for all the people. Turns out that the far left in my party didn't look at me as a true Democrat, and the far right didn't look at me as a Republican. So you kind of get caught in the middle, and so the enthusiasm from your own party doesn't really turn the votes out, and the negative from the other party just kind of consumes those people that normally try to think mm-hmm. for themselves.
Now, it's hard, as we know, for a Democrat to get elected statewide in Louisiana, and how that has changed in just a few years. Mary Landrieu faces re-election next year, and even though she's a three-term incumbent, she's got a lot of the same issues that you had when you run against David Vitter. Can she win?
Yes. All politics are local, and additionally, we will be moving into, before her election comes up, where the health care and people are screaming and hollering. But when it's all said and done, you can fix those problems that need to be fixed if the Congress wants to engage there. But when people start realizing that they're having affordable health care available to them, business people realize it's not as bad as they claimed it's going to be. I think the atmosphere will be different. You had as I've told people, when you go to Washington, each party puts out its talking points. I never read my party's talking points because I always believe that I had to be responsive to the people that sent me there, not to the party that I belong to. However, when you look at the media nationally and even locally, the conservative talk shows, and the fact is, and I laugh because Rush Limbaugh had said he had no responsibility for being truthful or honest. He was just getting paid to say what he wants to say. And when I said that on a KPL radio show, the phone lines lit up. And I said, well, I'm just a messenger telling you the person you listen to says. So if you say it loud enough, often enough, and it's repeated enough, then it must be true. It seems to be the logic out there.
Sounds like you're soured on politics.
I'm not soured on politics. I've always been an active participant. So I still support people. I've never been against anybody. When I supported people in politics, I've always picked out a person and been for that person. And I guess that's the difference. A lot of people, it's control politics. It's about power. It's about money. Mine was about public service, and those people that knew my family would understand that.
You're working for Southern Strategies?
I'm working with the Southern Strategy Group. I'm doing some lobbying. I had one or two clients to do some legislation for this session. And I've been working with a friend of mine that trying to help people raise money and capital to start up some businesses and do some other things. So it's been interesting startup, doing something new and different again, even though the lobbying part is not new and different. It's something that I've done all my life in some way, shape, or form.
297-5633, inkstershow@wrkf.org. We'll entertain some inquiries from you as we move along in our remaining time with Congressman Charles Melancon, Democrat. You're still a Democrat.
Yes, sir.
Always will be?
I don't have any intentions of changing. My wife and I have talked about registering as an independent because that's basically what I've been and in these days and times. But, you know, if you go back and looking at the Landrieu race, the dynamics are different than they were 4 years ago. And I think it's going to be a whole different race. People run on their merits. Mary has has put herself out there as a person that not only concerns mm-hmm. herself with the average working person, but also with the business community. She's okay. balanced that.
Okay, Trevor in Hammond asks why you didn't make the prostitution issue with Vitter more of an issue in 2010.
Well, you know, I've always tried to run positive campaigns, even with the one with Little Billy, where my consultant came and says, you got to hammer him. And I said, no, we need to just make people aware that it's not his daddy and that it's him. So the ad that we ran was kind of a tongue-in-cheek, this is Billy, in the big man suit. But I have tried not to be a negative person all my life. I've always been the eternal optimist, if you would. Sometimes it's tough, but that's the type of races we try to run. Bradley Bachok, who's run several of my campaigns, including my senatorial race, I saw in today's paper, has just been promoted up. I'm going to have to call him and ask him, does he not tell me good news anymore? Bradley just got moved up, I think, to Media Matters as the executive CEO.
Of Media Matters.
I think that's correct. I saw it in the paper this morning. It was about 5:30. So
he's a young guy, too.
He's a good guy. His dad is a friend. His granddad was a very close friend of Peachy.
Remember Shelley?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Kobe asks, would you consider our higher education system in Louisiana in crisis, Congressman? And if so, what can we do to fix it?
I think our entire education system in Louisiana is in crisis. What's going on right now at LSU and the other universities, I'm concerned that to turn it around is kind of like the global warming issue. If you don't do something now, I don't know if 10 years from now we'll be reaping the real bad news, especially as LSU drops from a Tier 1. That's not an easy achievement to reach, and then to have only 4 years as a Tier 1 and then to start that reversal is not good.
Joseph from Ascension, he says, does a good congressman have any advice for a college-age Louisiana Democrat like myself as far as interning or working with perhaps Senator Landrieu or perhaps Representative John Bel Edwards' upcoming campaign?
Yeah, I encourage people to be involved in politics. Ironically, my dad was the mayor of the town. My grandfather on my mother's side was an assessor. His brother was a DA. The other brother was chief of police. But my dad always kept politics out of the house. It wasn't until I left college and needed to find a job that I got involved in politics, and my first job was working for Edwin Edwards, who was running for governor.
You were his driver, right?
I drove him some. I was a gatekeeper.
I bet you've got some stories, huh?
Matter of fact, Bob Mann and I talked about writing a book, and Bob says, what's the book going to be about? I said, Bob, I don't know. It might be a compendium of things. I don't know if it'll have just one focus, but I did a thing with Edwin out in Erath last fall, and they asked me to, Warren Perrin, who's a friend mm-hmm. of mine, said, tell a couple of stories. And I got up and I said, well, Edwin, I thought I'd tell him about the day you and Peach and I first were all in the elevator together. Then I realized I couldn't tell that one. And I thought I'd tell about the day the briefcase fell out the airplane in Monroe. Then I realized I couldn't tell that one. And Edwin, it's gotten to the point that there's nothing I can really say. You're married now and I'm married now, so let's just...
He got a standing ovation from the Louisiana Senate last week.
I think if Edwin had not had that conviction, Edwin probably could have run for governor again.
Even at 86?
He is so loved by even the people that don't like him because he's a Democrat.
And I saw that Woody Jenkins and Dan Ritchie were running to get their photos taken with Edwin Edwards.
Yeah, it was an interesting
He has day. A magnetism that is remarkable.
He has a magnetism and he has a memory that's phenomenal. If anyone could remember people's names 20 years later and not having seen them in 20 years, Edwin's that person. He was a mentor. And as I've said, I look at Edwin, he knew where the line drew. Mm-hmm. That's why when they started talking about Edwin breaking the law, I said, some of those other folks, yes, but I know this man. And unless they get it so that he has no defense or they just envelop him, which is my opinion after watching that trial they did, he didn't have a chance. Fighting the federal government, if they want you, they're going to get you.
The governor of Louisiana today, Bobby Jindal, spent time in Houston over the weekend with 80,000 of his closest friends at the
NRA.
Annual NRA convention. Over 600 credentialed media people were there, by the way. And Governor Jindal, of course, gave the NRA members some red meat. He's steadfast in his support of the Second Amendment. Kevin, I'm trying to get the attention of our esteemed producer. I think he's got some comments from Governor Jindal that we'll hear in just a moment regarding the NRA and the event in Houston. The gun issue, that's one that it doesn't matter whether it's John Bel Edwards or Bobby Jindal, a Louisiana politician who strives to be governor is probably going to run for the hills or embrace the NRA. It's a tough issue, isn't it?
Well, you know, it is. You know, when you're going to getting ready to go to vote on issues on the floor, and they've taken stuff that shouldn't be in the realm of guns or pro-life or whatever, and they've meshed it in, then it kind of skewers what people's reality is to vote. You know, I've always said, I think every person in this country ought to have an opportunity to vote in public in front of everyone on an issue, because it's not an easy thing to do. There's two sides to each issue. Sometimes there's multiple sides. And so it's not as easy to finesse a vote that you believe could be compromised in terms of making it a win-win situation. Mm-hmm. And that's what's gone, as I see it, with the legislative processes as we're moving into this decade. Too much of I want it my way or no way, it comes from both sides of the aisle. And when you get that, then you have a winner and a loser instead of the people. Government is about the people. And what has happened is government has become about ideologies and parties. And that's what I think is wrong with it.
Let's give a listen to Governor Bobby Jindal this weekend in Houston, where he went before the NRA convention and gave the folks exactly what they came to hear.
Last year in Louisiana, we did something even more fundamental. We adopted the strongest, most ironclad constitutional protection for law-abiding gun owners in this country. It's our own Second Amendment, if you will, in the state of Louisiana. I don't care what kind of left-wing judges President Obama appoints, he won't be able to touch our freedom to keep and bear arms in the great state of Louisiana.
What do you think, Congressman?
Well, you know, when you have 20 children mercilessly killed as we had, background checks that are more thorough is a reasonable approach to solving the problem. Matter of fact, my wife tried to convince me I needed to leave some of my guns in Napoleonville or give them to somebody, and I probably got 40 or 50 guns. Don't need 40 or 50 guns, but I have them. Most of them I hunt with and or shoot with or do something with at some points in time. Some of them just old guns that I had as kids that are still there, and I'm not going to get rid of them because the sentimental value. But it's a matter of, you know, I'm for the second rights. But if you read the entire Second Amendment, it's about the militia. It's about protecting. It's not arming ourselves. Yes, arming ourselves in defense. I bought my wife a Judge. A Glock might be a good gun. Maybe just a sawed-off shotgun, ride gun. Because when somebody walks in that door where your house in the middle of the night, if you can put enough BBs right in the middle of that door, that's a good self-defense. You know, I understand people that want these weapons of that are, you know, with the large clips and all, but is it necessary for everybody to have them?
297-5633. We'll spend another segment with Charlie Melancon, who has been unshackled, speaking the unvarnished truth as he sees it. Back with him after this timeout. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Thank you for being with us. If you'd like to join the conversation with Congressman Melancon, former state lawmaker and former president of the American Sugarcane League, and now a lobbyist with Southern Strategy, you may call 297-5633, 877-217-5757, or reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. And our previous segment, we were talking about sometimes how people think one way and vote another or lead in another way, as President Obama did and Bill Clinton did when he was the commander-in-chief on the gay rights front. What about Congress people? Do you have consultants and people whispering in your ear about how you should vote to keep your political viability?
Well, you know, every day we go through what the votes on the floor were going to be, and in one particular instance, which you and I were chatting about in between the sections, it was about discrimination against gay rights. And I told my staff, this is a bill I can vote for, that I want to vote for. And my staff was telling me why my constituency wouldn't agree and that I shouldn't be voting for. And I'm a representative of the people. But at times you need to think, well, I should have some discretion to do what I believe is the right thing for the people of this country, regardless of who they are. And we were having this debate, and it dragged on for about an hour. And I finally said, let's call so-and-so in. This is a guy that's gay who came in, and he came in the office, and I said, they're telling me I can't vote for this. And he looked at me and says, and you can't. And it's like, I just got that from a person that would be affected by this vote who tells me I can't because that's not my constituents' wishes, the majority. You get torn. And I said about voting your conscience sometimes and voting what you think you would like to. But it is a representative government, and I come from the South. I come from Louisiana. This creationism issue is kind of like the same thing with you hear people, well, be pro-life, and then on all the other issues, they want you to be pro-choice. You have some choices. Healthcare was a perfect example. Mm-hmm. Give me some choices. Well, Arkansas, they gave them choices, and the governor kind of got forced by the legislature. The feds said, okay, we'll take what you said you want to do. Provide health care to the masses or to the people, and let's get this cost down, and let's get it to be good. Was it a good bill? In general, it had a lot of problems in it that could have been fixed had both sides come to the table in an earnest attempt to draft legislation for the good of the country. But when it became obvious that the bill was not going to be supported in one way, shape, or form by one of the parties, then it basically became the left wing of my party that started drafting. Same thing with the cap and trade bill. When you allow one ideology to be in control and don't want to have that interchange or exchange of ideas and thoughts. And I mean, when I was in the legislature with John Hankel and Pepe Bruno and those guys, and of course, they're moderates compared to some of these guys these days. But we understood each other's politics. And when it came down to it, the Bo Ackles of the world and myself and Hankel, and we sat down at the table and said, okay, what's it going to take to make this bill work? And we sat down and got it done. And then, boom, it took off. Right. Everybody had to do what they had to do for their politics on the front end. But at the end, it was a matter of let's get something done.
Well, Bob Mann, in his first book, wrote a sterling biography of Senator Russell Long, and Long acknowledged that he was in favor of civil rights, but he couldn't dare vote for it. So here was a guy who was going to vote against it, who was trying to round up votes in favor of it.
Yeah.
Does that say something about the terrain of Washington that, and in Baton Rouge for that matter, that may not be so good about our system, or maybe that is something that is unusually beneficial?
Well, you go back to my statement, everyone should have the opportunity to express their opinion in public and either vote for it in public and listen to both sides of the argument. As people in public office, and some people say, well, you took the easy route. There is no easy route. Even when you're voting against it and you're trying to make a bill better, which is what I try to do in the Energy and Commerce Committee on the cap and trade and on health care. Put in elements and thoughts that I had that would make it a better bill, which was contrary to what the leadership of my party wanted. They didn't want me fixing it because the other guys didn't want to play, but I knew where the other guys were coming from. And some of the things that we could have done, they didn't necessarily all become parts of the bill, but every tweak can make it better.
It is remarkable sometimes what happens to people when they go to Washington. Like you take a fellow like Al Franken. I thought he would be a wild man in Washington. I barely heard from him since he became a U.S. senator.
Peachy and I got to know Al and his wife. While he is funny, he is very pragmatic. He takes a position, for instance, when I was running for the Senate, and I built this relationship with him. He doesn't give to people challenging incumbent senators, regardless of what party they're in.
Really? So he would not help you against Senator Vitter?
He says, I'm not going to do it. That's something that I've said I'm not going to do. And I admire him for it. At least he was principled, and it was a rule, and he made that rule, and he stood by it, regardless of what your party affiliation was. So, it's when people are principled in that respect, and they don't deviate or accept another logic or line because it's the easier way to make your point. For instance, like I said, you know, you look at the pro-life and the pro-choice issue. Nobody wants to go out and have an abortion, for God's sakes. But there is health care issues. There is the issue of if you're going to have that baby live, why not try and help that mother to raise that baby? Instead of having one life ruined, you're going to have two life ruined if you don't do anything for the mother. No education, no health care benefits, no nothing. Then you crash it. And I know I'm stepping into an area that my daughter, on because I voted pro-life. Now, I was accused of not being 100% pro-life. But it's hard to be in terms of you just want to have that child born, but you don't want to do anything for that child or that mother after that. And as a society, I don't want anybody to have an abortion, but I want to make sure that child or that mother or both of them have some opportunities to make their way in life and not be miserable and on food stamps and on health care that we've got to pay for and those kind of things.
Tim in Sorrento inquires of you, Congressman, do you think Governor Jindal can be elected president?
I guess on an odds basis, no. I think the odds run against him. Although his comment about a lanky or a thin, dark-colored person, do they have a chance of being president, referring to Obama? Anything's possible in this country. But I think what you saw with Mr. Romney in this past election, while the poll numbers for Barack Obama have never gotten above 50 or 51%, when the time comes and it gets down to it, you can't be aligned so far to the left or so far to the right that you can't come to the middle, because the independents are the people that are making the decisions. They're not Democrats. They're not Republicans. They're pragmatic people that want to see people that care about America and all the people in America.
Now, Bobby Jindal, it seems, is going out of his way to look like Bobby Kennedy these days with the hair. And Bobby Kennedy, of course, was a slight man, as is Governor Jindal. And who knows, he may be modeling himself after the former U.S. Senator from the great state of New York. Unfortunately, Bobby Kennedy died at the age of 42. And Bobby Jindal, who's been around for a long time now, will be 42 on June the 10th. Bill on South Harrells Ferry. Good morning, Bill. You're on the air with Congressman Malasaw.
Well, Congressman Malasaw, it's great to hear that you're pro-life, and we're talking about the Second Amendment, you know, with people. And the Sandy Hook thing was a tragic thing. 26 people died that day. But do you realize, and I'm glad to hear your position, that 3,400 babies were aborted on that same day?
Yeah, and I can tell you that I don't like that either. But there's got to be a better way than just say no, which seems to be the acumen these days of both sides of the aisle. You know, there's reasonable ways to fix problems without being belligerent and obnoxious and on either side of that issue. And that's what I think is getting wrong with America. We were talking earlier about the reapportionment and the way my district now has been butchered. Is it fair to the people in Thibodaux and Houma, Lafourche and Terrebonne Parish that form a metropolitan area and should have one representative there because of the commonality? But no, it was divided up for political reasons. That's part of what the problem in this country. We need to start looking at, and state by state, those states where you see they've done a reapportionment commission where the legislators and the people that are basically the ones that are drawing the districts now don't do it. They're done by the numbers. It gives you more concise, compact, hopefully with more commonality mm-hmm. in the districts, and you elect people that respond better. It's not the panacea, but respond better to their constituents in terms of hardcore right, mm-hmm. hardcore left, because then what happens is you have few people that are in the middle that can be rational when the debate becomes mm-hmm. so heated that they're almost 180 degrees, or actually, as Steny Hoyer one day said, they're closer to 360 uh-huh. degrees apart. They've come so far to the extreme that they're meeting each other on the bottom side. You know, government is about working for the people, and it's about doing what's good for the country and the people of the country, mm-hmm. regardless of your position in life, regardless of your status, your color, or anything else. And that's what I think we've gotten away from in this country.
when we look at last year's election, Democratic candidates actually got more votes than Republicans in the U.S. House nationwide, yep. But yet Republicans control Congress, and it's exactly because of having an advantageous map in which these districts are drawn to help Republicans because Republicans control most of the state legislatures right now.
Well, and
that's where the real action is.
Yeah, the real action and where the reapportionment occurs, and of course that's been part of the K Street project and the Republican Party's project was to take it up from the grassroots. It's if you look at the Senate, the House is of course Republican because it's gerrymandered. When the Democrats were there, they gerrymandered it. I mean, you know, I'm not saying anything new or different, but the Senate's the whole state votes. And so you've still got more states, not by a large majority, but more states that are Democratic majority senators than they are Republicans. Now, does that mean that, you know, I should be getting out and just cheering for the Democrats? I want to cheer for the reasonable people. I want to cheer for the people that don't get up there and just make as much points as they can by being radical to the right or to the left. The amazing part here, if you look at the state legislature last week, the fiscal hawks and the Democrats came together to work towards trying to solve the budget crisis, to get rid of the one-time monies being spent. Mm-hmm. I commend them for them. You know what they're doing? They're talking to each other. They're doing what legislators used to do. And now what happens is one party decides that in the middle of the fray, they're going to start bashing the other party because they're going to force them to raise all these taxes is what their comments are. Look, let the people that were elected by the people with outside interference other than their constituents get in there, mash it out. A good deal is when both parties walk away, neither one of them totally happy, but neither one of them mad. That's when you've got a good deal because neither party, neither group, neither ideology got everything they wanted. But what they got was a program or a bill that worked and worked for the good of the state or for the good of the people. That's what we're missing these days.
Carly, listening at WRKF.org in Lake Charles, inquires of you, Congressman, who are you most impressed by as far as fellow U.S. House members when you were in the House in your three terms?
Bonnie Frank was one of the smartest people I've ever met. Death by a thousand small cuts, I would say.
Now, that's an interesting choice.
He's
brilliant man.
He's brilliant. He had the skill to articulate his thoughts, kind of like an Edwin Edwards. Never lacked for an antidote or a quick-witted comment. There were a lot of people that in Washington, both sides of the aisle, that I gained a lot of respect for. The thing that I guess is frustrating is, unlike when John Breaux and Trent Lott went to the Congress, they came in a class together, John being a Democrat in the majority, Trent being a Republican in the minority. They lived next door to each other in the same subdivision. Their kids went to school. They watched football.
Now they worked
cheerleading.
Together.
They worked together. You know, they protected each other. They didn't attack each other. They understood their politics. When Breaux could help Lott get votes on the Democratic side for something he wanted or co-author a bill with him, and vice versa, when Breaux needed help on the Republican side to get votes, that's the kind of working relationships they built because they went to Washington and they moved their families up there. They got to know each other. There used to be a bipartisan retreat every year where the Democrats and Republicans went off for a weekend together and talked about the issues of the country. That went away a decade or so ago. And when you're going and all you're doing is hearing people plot against the other party, there's something wrong with that.
In Baton Rouge, do you think term limits have been a good thing?
No. Term limits, I think we're seeing the results of term limits, and it's going to get worse. People in there, they've got 12 years, basically. You want to make a name for yourself because you got no place to go.
In the institutional knowledge is,
you know, I'm not
different.
Sure where to even start where what I think is wrong with it. Term limits, roughly every election cycle that I can remember when I started observing it back in the 70s, about 30% of the House and the Senate were either moved on, weren't reelected. You had some people that stayed forever, 60 Rayburn, and then, of course, they tried to put 60 in jail. To me, 60 was the when I went to the legislature, one of the first people I visited with in state legislature was 60. He said, why are you coming to visit me? I said, because you know where all the bones are buried. You know how they got there and why they're there, why bills live and why bills die, and why bills come up every session of the legislature. Mm-hmm. You know, having that institutional knowledge was just something that impressed me. He got it because of longevity, because he was a smart old guy, and he knew about Louisiana.
Well, it's good to see you, Congressman. You're looking good. Glad you're living in Baton Rouge now.
Well, it's nice to be here. It was a kind of a switch. I've got a daughter here and a son in Donaldsonville, mm-hmm. and when we were in Napoleonville, we were closer to the son. Now we're closer to the daughter, but in reality, we're closer to both of them because we're home.
Well, we hope to have you back again soon, and I think if you'd talked more like this a few years ago, you would have gotten more votes.
That's possible.
Thank you. Congressman Charles Melancon, now a lobbyist. You'll see him at the Capitol if you're down there, and there's a month to go. A month from today, the session ends. We'll keep you posted. For Kevin Gallagher, I'm Jim Engster. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.